Come blast off in my time machine. Third eye feeling like an Evazine. Blast off, blast off, blast off, blast off. Come blast off in my time machine. Third eye feeling like an Evazine. Blast off, blast off, blast off, blast off.
Blast off on another epic episode of the Hyper Anomalous Esoteric Research Organization Podcast, aka Hero Paranormal. My name is Ryan, the anomalous ambassador of the airwaves, broadcasting from the base at La Madre Mountain, just south of Area 51. And we're going to delve into it. There's a bunch of stuff to look at. But before we do, for those of you who have been asking, we do have some new swag, t-shirts, etc. over at the shop. Head on over to heroparanormal.com. Click on shop and you can access that. And don't be scared of that subscribe button. That will connect you to a bunch of content over there. And let me tell you, the content we're going to get into today is weird. It's got patches of high strangeness in it. Of course, probably the biggest question mankind has ever pondered. But before we do, let me give a shout out to a product my wife invented, engineered, brought to market, and formulated. It's called Spice Natural Bronze. You can purchase that at happinessmedical.com. This is the first 100% all organic lotion that keeps your skin hydrated, moisturized throughout the winter months while keeping that amazing tan you got in the summer. And it can do the same for you in the spring and summer. It just is going to enable you to not have to go out in that dry, hot sun all day long to get the color. So, yeah, you can avoid that big C word. Anyway, tan as if your life depends on it, because it does. Again, you can purchase that at happinessmedical.com. Every purchase you make helps support the podcast, and heck, my wife invented this stuff. It's 100% organic and only the best ingredients, with 100% organic aloe vera and coconut oils infused with other organic ingredients. Your skin will thank you, and so will that significant other you happen to buy it for, or maybe just spoil yourself. You won't regret it. Also, if you haven't been over to Patreon, keep in mind that just for the price of a cup of coffee a month, you can access all the content behind the paywall. There's a ton of it. And all of the patrons know the juicy stuff is over there. I tried to throw a little spice here, but yeah, the free feed is cool, but there's a bunch going on over there. All right, enough of the shameless grift. Let's move on. The one, the only, spacewolfresearch.com is going to begin for the first time to allow people on the property. I will have more information on how to go about getting on the property to investigate with your friends or other researchers. More will come having to do with that. Okay, so let's talk about it. The reincarnation trap. What is it? Where did the idea come from? And is reincarnation even real? Many argue it is. And why not? It has been believed in since the dawn of time. Humankind has talked about energy, reincarnation, and us possibly being in a cyclical trap for the soul of some sort. So what is it all about? Well, according to some, if you go into the light, so to speak, at the time of death, and we've all heard that, you know, go towards the light. The belief is that in thousands of cases, many have described the light as a wonderful place to go through. And this is from people who have had NDEs or near-death experiences. When examining what people say about these near-death experiences, the light sounds like something of beauty, warm, caring, novel, and people under deep hypnosis have talked about the light being all-encompassing. Again, very warm and bright. Many claim it may be a portal to another dimension or a bridge to heaven. Sounds legit, right? And we see that there seems to be something on the other side. It's warm, it's bright, it's light, it's all-encompassing. And we tend to think that, of course, we would go towards the light. However, is the light a doorway? Is it something good? Is it a portal to another dimension? Is it a bridge to heaven? Or is there possibly something more sinister? According to some, they believe there is something more sinister, and that this light may be a type of bait. Bait? Did someone say bait? Why would there be bait? Well, we all know that bugs like to go towards those bug zappers, and that is a light in the dark. We all know that deer tend to be blinded and hypnotized when they see a vehicle coming along a roadway. In fact, frozen in time until sometimes, splat, they get hit by said vehicle. And if there is a bait scenario to the light, which many have meditated on, there is a possibility that entering the light or the tunnel of light when we die is a trap for reincarnation, a trap which may be able to be hacked. The non-physical world could be accessible, especially if the trap is avoided. Some claim to have done regression work and hypnotic work, and they believe the light is a good thing, an interdimensional portal, can't talk, allowing the soul to exit the physical world. However, if the earth is archonic in nature, according to many Gnostics, it is. Of course, the Gnostic idea is that there is a demiurge, and that this demiurge is sort of like a good cop, bad cop god. That's overly simplified, of course, but it's the belief that human beings contain a piece of the highest good or divine spark within themselves, and that this has fallen from the immaterial world into the bodies of humans. And as we know, these bodies decay, they rot, they get old, and we die, as all physical matter is subject to decay. Now, interestingly, with the Gnostic idea of the demiurge, many believe in Gnosticism. In other words, quote-unquote, having knowledge, gnosis, knowing, which is a collection of ideas and religious systems that emphasize personal spiritual knowledge, aka gnosis, above the orthodox religious teachings. Now, Gnostic belief systems generally present a distinction between a supreme hidden god behind the veil and a malevolent lesser divinity sometimes associated with the biblical deity Yahweh. Let's not get caught up in names, because I think that can really cause problems. However, this malevolent lesser entity, this divinity, this lord of our material world, this material existence, is flawed or evil. And the Gnostics believe that the principal element of salvation is this knowledge of the hidden divinity. Basically, if you're able to attain the esoteric light or the insight, the illumination, then you can basically move forward after death, and you can survive in ways that others can't. So let's look at these beliefs and how they align and in some ways contradict Christianity. Well, many Gnostics believe that reincarnation is real. In fact, many religions believe that reincarnation is real. Only Christians basically teach against it, however, also accept it as truth, with the obvious evidentiary claim of Jesus resurrecting. Of course, they say the resurrection is not exactly reincarnation. However, this is a point that could be argued for millennia. Nonetheless, Gnostic teachers can align their beliefs with Christianity. And in the Gnostic Christian tradition, Christ is seen as a divine being, which basically it was sent down to this material plane to bring us back to recognition of our own divine nature, our own divine spark, our connection to this amazing entity behind the veil, this good God, for lack of a better word, not the quote-unquote bad God, the Demiurge. Interestingly enough, for centuries, most scholars who had anything to do with Gnostic works were considered heretics, burned at the stake, imprisoned for life, or worse. Yeah, there's worse. Many were tortured. Now, many of these Gnostics were actually, in fact, also Christian. We all know of Giordano Bruno, but there's a long list of others who follow this suit. So much like Christ was not scared of death, Giordano Bruno was also not scared of death, and he did not mind telling higher-ups in the church his philosophies. He was a Dominican friar and embraced Calvinism. And, you know, he basically was tried for heresy by the Roman Inquisition, because basically he just knew more than many of the higher up priests and even pontiff. So he explained that human laws did not apply to him, that there were divine laws that he was more worried about, and he was more worried about his connection with his creator than any of the demands made upon him by human beings in this material plane. Of course, he was executed, burned at the stake, and since has become quite an interesting figure for those involved with Gnosticism or who believe Bruno's philosophies. Now, Bruno believed in pantheism, which was not taken very well by the church. Pantheism, of course, is that there is a bunch of divine entities. In other words, gods, possibly many with small g's. And the Inquisition found him guilty. After his death, he gained considerable fame and was celebrated as a martyr for science. However, I think many have gotten this wrong, because his heresy trial was not so much having to do with his cosmological views, but was more about his religious views about the afterlife. He believed that we have an afterlife, and that it is much different than what the church taught. He read many free thinking and forbidden books, and he was quite peaceful. However, the behavior of calling out church authorities was known as heresy at the time, and I guess to a lesser extent still is. But he was reading books which were banned. They found a copy of the banned writings of Erasmus, and it was annotated by him. This was discovered hidden in one of the bathrooms of the monastery. And when he learned that they were preparing to try him for heresy, he shed his religious habit, at least for a time, and began wandering. He wandered near and far, went to Geneva, and he taught others. When he was finally imprisoned, went to trial and executed, many faults were found in Bruno's philosophies by the church. Specifically, He believed in the transmigration of the human soul. A lot of divination, magic, and also, possibly as important as the others, is the plurality of worlds and their eternity. So he was way ahead of the times. He believed there were different dimensions all taking place at the same time. And he held opinions very contrary to the Catholic faith. Well, he was burned at the stake, unfortunately. But his philosophies have lived on. And many Gnostics believe he was illuminated. But I think many others learned that you cannot be as vocal about your philosophies or wear them on your sleeve, because in the same rooms where Giordano Bruno was questioned and asked his philosophy between science and faith, 16 years later, we had Cardinal Bellarmino, who then contested Bruno's heretical thesis and summoned Galileo, who also faced a very treacherous inquisitorial trial. Luckily for him, he was not as vocal, and that ended with a simple abjuration. So people learned, you just don't say what you're thinking, or you may be burned at the stake. But Gnostics had to go into hiding. People with gnosis, those who believed things differently than the predominant faith, went into hiding, and secret societies flourished. Many secret societies are extremely old for this very reason. That brings me to the next case of the monad. In Gnosticism, in many systems of Gnostic belief, God with a capital G is known as the monad with a capital G, or the one. And keep in mind that dogs, the inverse of God, are said to not have souls, but instead have a monad with a lowercase m. There's a lot of this inversion, and much of this was inspired by Pythagorean theorems and Pythagoras, who called the first thing that came into existence the monad with a capital M. So how would the monad with a capital M trickle down into the material plane and be present within an animal, for example, such as a dog with a small or lowercase m monad? Well, through emanation. In other words, supreme light descends through a series of stages, graduations, and trickles down, becoming progressively more material and embodied. According to many Gnostic systems and tradition, in some time, it will turn around and return to the one, the capital M monad, retracing its steps and rising above. Now, the aeons are the various emanations of the capital M monad. So, in other words, various interactions or emanations, often in male-female pairings, can become aeons as a totally different pleroma or region of light. Of course, the lower the region, the closer to the darkness. In other words, the physical world. Many who believe that this is a prison planet may not be far off, which brings us to the reincarnation trap. Is it a trap? And if so, why? Well, according to Hindu tradition, reincarnation is the belief that the soul, after biological death, begins a rebirth in a new body that may be spiritual, animal, human, and this all depends on the moral quality of the previous life's actions. Enter karma. In other words, whether good or bad. So if someone did a lot of divine things and was a very good person, they would have more in their next reincarnation. Karma seems like a nice idea, and it seems like a fair way to play. However, there's more to the reincarnation theory, and enter cryptomnesia. While technically the phenomenon of not recognizing the return of an old memory as a product of memory, but instead seeing it as a new or original thought or idea, where this enters into the whole reincarnation genre is, let's just face it, there are many savants and young children who have traits or abilities which they just have not been able to manifest in this particular existence. As an example, Alma Elizabeth Deutscher, born February 19th, 2005. She is a British composer, and she composed her first piano sonata at the age of 5. At 7, she completed the short opera, The Sweeper of Dreams. At 9, she wrote a violin concerto. So how is this possible? She's not the only one. Enter the very reason I use the name cryptomnesia. Typically, this is a word used for authors. However, it's when they're unaware that they're reading something or that they recall something, they have read something in the past, and then they write something thinking it's a brand new idea. Well, the same is true of this regression and past life hypnosis. And even more specifically true for kids who have abilities from past lives or remember things from past lives, and they can't explain, meaning science, can't explain how these kids know all this stuff. Many are born knowing how to play the guitar, for example, knowing how to play the violin, knowing how to compose musical sonnets, but this is not only in the music genre. We have the same ability in every single form of human activity. So, is it possible? It seems to some that this is 100% proof that children are able to recall things from past lives. Now, what's interesting is typically, according to studies, it's usually children who are, well, come to an untimely death earlier on in life. The ability to recall your past life is more poignant when you pass away at a younger age in your previous life. However, more has been found out about this, and some are able to recall further down the line or later in life. I'm going to give you some examples, but first, believe it or not, I'm going to start with myself. Now, the reason I'm going to start with myself is I'm going to tell you a quick story. I was at the time working through a jeweler in New York, bringing jewels, watches, etc. to Utah and consigning them to jewelry stores in Utah. It seemed like a good gig. It paid the bills for a little bit. Wasn't all that lucrative, but I fancied myself a big shot. It afforded me to get, you know, some fancy stuff to wear. And one time at the airport, this was a very interesting thing took place. Back in 2002, I dropped off my vehicle at the park and ride lot. That's what you used to do. You would jump on a bus after dropping your car at the park and ride lot. I guess they still do this. And you would drive the bus to your terminal, go through security, get on your flight, and I was on my way to New York for another round of jewelry consignment. And in this particular case, I jumped on the park and ride bus, and I saw someone who looked very obviously disabled, and he seemed to have a handler with him. and a backpack. Now, where things get interesting is this person approached me and started talking to me. And he basically started to tell me a story, which at first kind of freaked me out. So this is how it went down. He basically introduced himself. He said, "I know you from before." His name was Kim Peek, and he was the inspiration for the character Raymond Babbitt in the 1988 movie Rain Man. Now, although Peek was diagnosed with a number of things, he was, by every stretch of the imagination, a savant. An extreme savant. You could tell him your birthday and where you were born, and he could tell you what the weather was that day. That's where he got the name, the Rain Man. He could tell you whether it was raining, whether it was overcast, whether it was sunny. A seemingly impossible feat, right? Well, so his handler came over and said, "Hey, how you doing? This is Kim. He's the real Rain Man, you know, like from the movie." And he explained that Kim was able to do other things cognitively. Specifically, his performance was not limited to the ability of telling whether or not it rained the day you were born. So he proceeded to tell me, "What are you up to these days?" And I told him, and I thought myself a pretty big deal. I had a fancy watch, and I showed him my fancy watch. And I remember he had a Timex Indiglo, and he showed me his watch, and he hit the button, and it lit up, and he says, "See, mine lights up even at night." And I could immediately tell this guy was smarter than, you know, I thought he was. Now, he went on to tell me something I don't remember at all or recall at all. But as he was telling me, the memory started to flood and I became emotional. Whether or not it's true, I don't know. But I took him for his word. And for whatever reason, whether psychosomatic or not, I started to remember things that he was telling me. So he went on to say, basically, that I, in a past existence, I'm guessing that it was fairly recent, that I was darker skin color, and that I was on a ship. Apparently, he said he was on it with me, and that we were hit, and a bunch of guys went overboard, and that I kept swimming out to rescue guys to take them, you know, to the rafts or the craft that were giving aid. And he said, "You just kept swimming out. You just kept swimming out and rescuing guys." And I said, "Oh, this is great. I'm a big hero. How did it end?" And he said, "That's the problem. You just kept swimming out." So apparently I eventually didn't come back. And he seemed to believe that this was a very noble thing, and it kind of brought, you know, it brought some emotions up for me, you know. And you oftentimes hear of people saying, "Oh, in past lives, I was a king, I was a queen, I was a mighty pharaoh, I was this, I was that." And this seemed just a little bit different to me. I wasn't anybody special. I apparently did something which was helpful, and he remembered it and considered it a valid measure of my spirituality. And he went on to say, "I bet your life is pretty good now." And it reminded me of karma. That's the only reason I bring up this story. Again, I have no proof, obviously, that this actually happened. I only know who I was talking to, which was Kim. And, you know, he happened to be the man, the real Rain Man. He was the inspiration for the character in the movie Rain Man. And he didn't seem like somebody who had anything to gain by telling me this. And he was a very legitimately kind person and individual. And so was his handler. So it was really nice to meet him. Now, moving forward, when it comes to this, I call it, and I know that this is not the right word, but I believe that in reincarnation sense, cryptomnesia is basically that amnesia of a previous existence when we happen to do things in this existence that are very similar. We forget that it has happened before, much like the way cryptomnesia is used with authors. So I feel it's a spiritual cryptomnesia, or cryptomnesia of a spiritual sense. Well, there are many examples, specifically children, as I talked about before, who are able to remember. One of my favorite cases is the case of Ryan Hammonds. Another Ryan, I know. Trust me, I don't do this on purpose, but it's a very interesting case. Of course, my name's Ryan, so that's why I note that. But there's many, many, many cases. But this particular case of Ryan Hammonds is interesting. His mom, Cindy, became aware that he would see a lot of things on TV and say, I know that guy. I've done that thing. Anytime he saw the Hollywood sign, he said, I need to go there. I used to be there. I used to live there. And he wanted to return there. Now, this is around the age of 4. Ryan would get very excited when he saw these things. He said that he had a house with a large swimming pool. He would dance on Broadway. And that he went to fancy parties with a cowboy man who had a horse and would even perform tricks. It all sounded very far-fetched, but this continued. So his mom, Cindy, started to look into it. She started writing down everything because at these ages, this stuff could just, like, powdered gold through your fingertips, disappear. So she started to write everything down and note it. Well, one time they were watching an old movie called Night After Night. Ryan became very excited and shouted, Hey mom, that's George. We did a picture together. Now, this is not the way a 4-year-old usually talks, right? And so she wrote it down. Now, when Ryan was 5, his mom made contact with a guy named Jim Tucker. He agreed to investigate Ryan's claims, as far-fetched as they were. And at one point, Ryan said, Hey, that's me. A dancer, an actor, and a guy who he saw. Well, Jim Tucker got a hold of a film archivist. And this archivist identified the man who Ryan claimed was him as a gentleman named Marty Martin. He was an agent who died in 1964. And interestingly enough, everything Marty Martin did is very much in line with what Ryan said. And Ryan's statements about his previous life lined up perfectly. So much, in fact, that Martin's daughter was contacted and verified everything, all of the statements. This shocked everyone. But I think it's a really good example of how there are cases, these strange cases where the information does not seep between the cracks, where it is brought to light, and we realize that there is possibly an amnesia of previous lives that wears off in our younger years, or at least potentially the ability to remember things from previous lives. Now, does this prove reincarnation 100% across the board? No, it doesn't. But it does provide data showing that in certain circumstances and cases, this may be taking place. The late great psychiatrist Ian Stevenson was an authority in scientific research on reincarnation. He conducted more than 2,500 case studies. This was over 40 years. And he matched birthmarks and birth defects to wounds and scars of the deceased from previous lives. This was verified by medical records, autopsies, etc. And he started something. He started something that people still continue to research, and that is that reincarnation should be examined from an unbiased scientific stance. And when it is, we find that the truth is far-reaching and beyond the realm of our understanding. Perhaps we will never know if reincarnation is 100% true. However, death is inevitable, and we will all eventually find something out. Whether or not we remember, however, is the big question. So is there a reincarnation trap? Well, many believe that there is an archonic soul trap. In other words, if you believe in the demiurge, the archons, and more, then past life regression therapy could show that there is a trap of sorts, something that keeps us coming back, right? The bait to take upon yourself the experiences of another life and metaphysically play the game again. So what if there is these life experiences, these lifetimes, these lives, for lack of a better word, are actually traps designed to keep us in a cycle of reincarnation and suffering? Well, of course you have to suffer in life. It's not all, you know, unicorns and rainbows. However, there may be a reason, an explicable reason, which has been mentioned by gurus near and far, specifically from India. And that is an example given of the case of women having children, childbirth in general. We all know that childbirth is extremely painful. And every time a woman has a child and gives birth, it's an ordeal she has to suffer through. And at the moment, she says, man, I'll never do this again. However, after bearing life to the child, learning to love the child, and seeing what she gains out of this amazing experience, she reluctantly starts to ponder it again, and many times over, has more children. So it goes to show that although painful, although something that has to be endured, the reality is that what is created pacifies that pain and suffering so much, in fact, that some women want to have more children after these ordeals. And I could see why. Let me explain. Let's say your life has some ups and downs. The downs are hideous. The ups are okay. And the consequences of having that life are very painful. That would make sense why our minds are somewhat wiped, for lack of a better word, or we have this amnesia from previous lives, because the pain would be too great to withstand in another incarnation. And why would you want to carry all that baggage? The biggest blessing that could be bestowed upon us is the wiping of those memories so that we can enter fresh into a new existence, a new incarnation, a new life, and play the game again. And this brings me to, you know, maybe it is something that we want to do over and over again. A lot of times people say, why in the world would you come back and want to reincarnate and do this all over again? This prison planet, this archonic existence, it's so rough and the lows are so low and the highs are not that high. It's horrible, right? Well, we know how addicting video games are. They're not easy. They're hard. They take a lot of time. You die over and over and over again, but kids and adults both want to keep playing the game. They get better at what they do, and that getting better at what they do enables them to kind of give themselves a pat on the back the next go around. They're able to surmount obstacles they were not able to surmount the previous game. And that may be how this archonic situation of reincarnation, this trap, might be formulated, as much like a game. Now let's take a moment and a breather, and let's say that archons are in charge of this material world, which is actually a prison for souls. If this is the case, then they have created this matrix of reality. We're born into it, very ignorant. with, you know, amnesia of our previous past. And slowly but surely, we are made to understand how society works. We are enslaved by materialism. We find jobs. We learn how to make money. We exist. And at times we are distracted by our devices, our technology, movies, music, etc. And then we are divided by political creed, nationality, race, etc. And basically, we are compartmentalized, a lot like the government compartmentalizes its top secret projects. Are we compartmentalized for our own safety, or is there a reason? I argue there's a reason. And that is the fact that if you forgot who you were and why you came here, you're less likely to level up. And if this is in fact a game, those closer to having the top score, the elites, for lack of a better word, would want to keep the other players down. The last thing you want is the other players to be questioning or resisting the rules of the game. You don't want them to get the cheat codes. We've all, you know, I played video games. Remember the N64 with all the cheat codes, or the Ataris. Anyway, you go back enough and there's cheat codes. PlayStation, early PlayStations, N64s, etc. You would get these cheat codes. And let's just say you didn't give these cheat codes to anybody. You only gave them to your best buddies and your best friends, because that cheat code is special territory. You have to be kind of chosen to be entered into the club. And if you have the cheat code to this existence, then you can create your own reality. And you can explore many more realms than the average player. So it would make sense that the elites, or the, if we're still using the video game analogy, those in competition for the highest scores would have access to higher intelligence and wisdom and not want to share it with the masses. We can create our own reality when we have those cheat codes. And if this information is understood, why would you share it with others who could then do better than your friends? I know, this is where the word to conspire with one another comes. And conspire is an interesting word in Latin because it means conspirare. And this is an Italian and Spanish, any of the Romantic languages all have the same root word for conspire in Latin. Conspire means to breathe with others. In other words, those within your circle, those closest to you, you're breathing the same air. You are conspiring with them. And when people are entered into that circle of trust, then we tend to balance out the possibility of sharing secrets with them, beliefs, intentions, cheat codes, and we resonate with them. You know how they say that the people that you hang out with the most are who you become? Well, this is true. It's the five people you hang out with the most is who you become. Five is an interesting number, too. Of course, we have the pentagon. We have the pentagram. And there seems to be something to, you know, how many people you can count on one hand. You hear that comment a lot. You have those people that you can count on one hand who you can trust with anything. Above and beyond that, well, that may create a situation where you can't necessarily trust them with everything. So if this is a soul trap, if this is something that is archonic in nature and there is a demiurge, I say, enjoy the game. Much like the Grateful Dead have said in their songs, if it's all going to hell in a bucket, you might as well enjoy the ride. Well, I argue you might as well not just enjoy the ride, hack the ride, figure out the ride, figure out the video game, and don't let the archons fool you into thinking otherwise. Because archons are tricksters, and they will use all methods necessary to deviate your path of enlightenment. They'll use your attachments, your doubts, your regrets, your emotions. And the more that you can concentrate on dreams, hopes, and desires, the less power they have. So, when that time comes, and we are looking at the tunnel of light or the light, if you do want to just kind of take a break, it sounds like it's easy enough. You just go to the darkness instead of the light. And if there's one thing we know about light and dark, it's easy to see the light in the darkness. So you can always go to the light anytime you want. But along the way, you can stop off at the rest area, take a look around, and you don't have to fall for the dimensional portal of reincarnation immediately. Now, remember who you are, what you came to this life to do. And I argue that that rest stop of darkness is a time when you can sort of focus on your divine being, on your immortality, on what you stand for. And then you have every right to re-engage with the program when you feel it's the right time to jump back in the game. You don't have to stay up all night playing Modern Warfare 3. You can play the game, you can take a break, you can take a rest, and you can always play the next day. The same seems to be true when it comes to metaphysics, spirituality, and in my opinion, the afterlife. Because the spirit is what's important, and if we are in fact players in an archonic game, shouldn't we focus on what's important and learn how to play the best possible? Of course, but we also need to remember to rest. So maybe don't jump back in the ring immediately. Maybe, just maybe, avoid the light after death. If even for a moment, if even just enough time to rest up for the next round. Hope you've enjoyed this podcast. I know it's a little deeper dive than most, but it's something I think it's important because I talk to a lot of people in the conspiratainment world, people with open minds who get really, you know, bummed out and down about this existence. They get bummed out and down about the idea that this is a recycling soul energy system. But it is what it is, and let's say it is that. That's okay, you know, that's like getting bummed. It sounds like maybe they've been playing the game too much. I can't say that for a fact, but maybe, you know, that's what happens. You get burnt out on something, you don't want to do it anymore. Well, don't get burned out. Take a break, take a breather. Understand your spirituality. Understand the metaphysics involved, and I don't see anything wrong with sharing a few hacks here and there. Maybe we can all level up in the next round and have a better afterlife. And for those who get down about this life, did you know that there's an actual probability of our existence of being alive? It's about 1 in 400 trillion. Well, that would be like winning the lottery 1.33 million times. So why are those odds so wild? Well, maybe, just maybe, because we are miracles. And we have the odds stacked against us. And remember that a miracle is an event so unlikely as to be almost impossible. So let's enjoy our time in the game. And hey, if you guys like this content, head on over to heroparanormal.com. You can access all the content behind the wall over there. In addition, if you want to support the podcast with more tangible items, material goods, if you will, head on over to happinessmedical.com. There is some stuff over there. Anything you buy there will help support the podcast. Again, that's happinessmedical.com. thefirstonlyshop.com. And I did get some new shirts, some new swag, some new stuff, both Space Wolf research and otherwise, over at the shop at heroparanormal.com. I got new sizes. Some people needed some extra different sizes for t-shirts, etc. Got new hats coming, but check that out. Anything you get on there, I will physically send to you. And any of the books you buy on there, I'll sign. And yeah, make sure you get those as well. Thanks so much. Thanks for listening. And have a blessed day. Until next time, keep your eyes to the skies, feet on the ground, but don't forget to take a look around.
Eyes. Follow me with your shape-shifting smiles and I see you. Maybe they'll believe you. Illuminati occult on trial. Silver discs and hidden files and we see you. We've got a